Welcome to As a Woman, Fertility Hormones and Beyond. I'm your host, Dr. Natalie Crawford, and I am a board-certified OBGYN and fertility physician, and also co-founder of Fora Fertility in Austin, Texas. Each week on this podcast, I discuss health and fertility and how they relate to your true self. Become a part of the community of collaboration that amplifies others as a woman. I hope you enjoy the episode. You are listening to the As a Woman podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Natalie Crawford, and today we're talking all about pregnancy loss, and I'm answering your questions. I know that this can be such a hard thing. If you are new here, I'm a board-certified OBGYN and REI, which means I did training in OBGYN and then a three-year fellowship in infertility. During this time, I had my own struggles conceiving, and if you don't know my story, I had four losses before I had my daughter. And this was a time that was so hard for me and I wasn't taking care of myself. And then I started blaming myself. I was trying to get information everywhere that I could. And I really felt like I was not getting help from many people. And I kept hearing the same thing over and over, which felt very dismissive. The truth is sometimes miscarriage happens. It happens at a more common rate as we get older. But understanding your body, understanding what's normal and what's not, and understanding when you should seek help and what that help should look like can be so advantageous as you try to advocate for yourself in this crazy world. So today I'm going to be answering some of your own questions about miscarriage. These questions are voicemails that you called and you left as a Q&A. The voicemail number is 657-229-3672. Again, that is 657-229-3672. I love answering your voicemail questions because you can try to search and find the information you need, but sometimes you really just have a question and you want that question answered. And by sharing that and being brave and leaving a voicemail, you're helping other people learn as well, because somebody probably has your exact same question. They just don't know how to ask it, or they don't even know they need that information. Above all, it's so important that you are your number one advocate. I hate that that's how the world is right now when it comes to health, but it is so, so important. So we're going to dive into your questions here. And again, 657-229-3672 is a number you can call and leave a voicemail for future episodes.
Hi, Dr. Crawford. I'm calling because I had a miscarriage about 2 months ago, and I went for a saline sonogram yesterday where my doctor did discover something in the uterine cavity. And so I'm scheduled for a hysteroscopy to have it removed. Just curious, is this common after a miscarriage to have either something retained from that? They did say it could be somewhat common. I was just curious what after a miscarriage would maybe cause that. My last saline sonogram before the previous transfer that I miscarried came back, looked totally normal. We went ahead with the transfer. I did get pregnant and then unfortunately miscarried. But yeah, they said they could remove it and then we could go forward with another embryo transfer after that procedure. But just curious how common that is. Thank you so much for your show. Thank you for all this information. Okay, bye.
This is a fantastic question, and I think it is something that is much more common than anybody ever talks about. Retained products of conception means that some piece of that pregnancy never was passed in the miscarriage process. This can actually be really problematic long-term because that tissue is abnormal. Your body will recognize it as normal, and eventually you can really get a lot of scarring around retained products at conception. The sooner you identify this, the sooner you take it out, the less likely it will cause any long-term problems. When you look at people who had a miscarriage, there was a study done, and this study was done and published in Fertility and Sterility, and it looked at patients over a six-year period of time who either had a MVA, which is a manual vacuum aspiration. That's a fancy word for putting a catheter into the uterus and you're pulling back on a device that has suction, and that suction is causing pressure and having the retained tissue come into the vacuum device. Or patients who had medical management, like taking misoprostol to try to induce a miscarriage. And these are both circumstances where patients had what we consider a missed miscarriage or a pregnancy that stopped growing or didn't have a heartbeat, but their body was not bleeding spontaneously. In these circumstances, what was seen was pretty high. So the rate of retained products of conception, and everybody had a saline sonogram or a hysteroscopy to look at this, it was 13% after an MVA and almost 30% after medical management. Importantly, this isn't all comers. This isn't looking at spontaneous miscarriage where you start bleeding on your own, or even circumstances where you need a DNC. But my takeaway here is that this is why it's so important to follow that HCG level down. And you've heard me say it, that whether it is you taking a pregnancy test at home at a set time and making sure it's negative, or your doctor has you coming in for blood work, because one of the signs of having retained products can be having persistent HCG in your system. So getting a positive pregnancy test for a prolonged period, like it never goes down to zero. Or if you're having abnormal bleeding, so having spotting or abnormal bleeding in between those cycles specifically, that's another thing that should have us worried. This doesn't mean that every single person who ever has a miscarriage has to have a saline sonogram or hysteroscopy to go and look. But part of this is why very often you'll see in fertility clinics, we go and look after you have a miscarriage. So you might say, I just had a saline sonogram right before I had this transfer. Why am I doing one again? And often it's because the situation has changed now that you've had that loss. So we want to just keep perspective that the odds of retained products are ultimately higher than we think about, especially when we're having to induce or give you medications because this is a missed miscarriage. This study didn't look at DNC, and of course at DNC, sometimes people do them under ultrasound, sometimes they're not done under ultrasound. I think it's really important to say here, the patient I'm always worried about the most is somebody who has a DNC in the postpartum period, because the uterus is so sensitive in this time period and susceptible, and that placenta has grown in more. So if that's a DNC for either hemorrhage or heavy bleeding, or a DNC for a retained placenta, whether that is after a second trimester or a preterm birth or even a full-term delivery, those circumstances do make me worried that there could be some retained products of conception, especially if you're having new onset of abnormal bleeding. So just something to think about if you were told it was really hard to get that placenta off and now you're having some spotting. In most of these cases, we'll go in hysteroscopically. So we'll put the camera inside. This is a minimally invasive procedure. Take out that area that has the retained products and everything's good. The longer it's been there, the more scar that might have formed might put us in a circumstance where we have to do a specific type of treatment postoperatively to try to prevent scar tissue from forming. So ultimately, if there's already scar and we're cutting it out, we don't want more scar to come right back. So this is something to really specifically talk to your doctor about, and something that can be seen on saline sonogram specifically. So ultimately, I'm really glad that your team was looking and they found this. Therefore, you know that you're going to be getting this removed in a really close proximity time to when it was discovered, and then can get on to that next transfer. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Ritual. Did you know that women were excluded from clinical research policy by federal law until 1993? But women belong in scientific research. They're essential, and Ritual knows this. I choose Ritual multivitamin every day because it is easy to take, and I know that I am getting high quality and traceable ingredients in a clean and bioavailable forms. In fact, Ritual conducted a university-led human clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy, and the results showed increase in vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. No my shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin that you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/AAW. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/AAW for 25% off. Thank you, Ritual. And now a thank you to one of our sponsors, Rocket Money. If you have been following, you know that I'm a fertility doctor, and at Fora, we just opened our own IVF lab. So I've been trying to save money because that's expensive. But it seemed like my bank account was absolutely stuck. So thankfully, I heard about Rocket Money and gave it a try. And it turns out I had a bunch of subscriptions that I was paying for that I have been too busy and I have forgotten about. Rocket Money helped me cancel some of them, and that is just making me feel so much better watching my account balance go up. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when they use the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/AAW. That's rocketmoney.com/AAW. rocketmoney.com/AAW. All right, moving on to our next question.
Hi, Dr. Crawford. I just have a question about my situation. So I'm having recurrent implantation failure with PGTA-tested embryos. I have no known medical condition. I don't have endometriosis, and on hysteroscopy, they removed one small one centimeter polyp and shaved off a fibroid that was protruding slightly into the lining. I had 11 PGTA normal embryos that made it to 5 days. My main question is, what happens after my next implantation failure? My RE is recommending to do a completely new batch of embryos. I just feel like I've just never heard of that before. She said that there could be a cohort effect where even though the embryos are tested, they're just bad somehow. And my other question is, if that is a problem, like a cohort effect of these embryos, how would you know that the next cohort wouldn't have the same problem? Because right now, my embryos all look like they're high quality and they've been tested. So how would you know if the next batch isn't, if it's not something that you can see and test for? I hope you have some answers to this, and thank you so much.
Recurrent implantation failure is a really tough thing, and to be really transparent, it's something that we're really starting to study and learn more about now. And the reason why, it's not that it hasn't always been around, but until PGT or pre-implantation genetic testing was more available and accessible, many patients did not have genetically tested embryos. And so when you were putting in these untested embryos and you knew, depending on the age of the patient, that your chance of pregnancy might be anywhere from just 10 to 45%, you expected some to fail. So you really blamed the embryo for a lot. Now that we have PGT tested embryos, we have to remember, I like to view that as being the low bar for success, because in our brain, we feel like a genetically normal embryo is perfect and should absolutely implant. But genetics are just the backbone for what an embryo needs. It still has to have the functionality, the capacity, the competency to metabolize right, to have cells divide, to start forming, and to the components that make up a fetus to implant. And so there's really a lot of steps that are involved from getting to point A to point B. And that's why your live birth rate with a genetically normal embryo is only going to be 65% per embryo. We don't see that number 100. Now, what is recurrent implantation failure? That's diagnosed after three failed genetically normal embryo transfers. And the reason why that number is 3 is because after that, we do start to have concern that you're falling off the bell curve. 65% chance of live birth for each embryo, the cumulative chance of pregnancy after 2 transfers, single embryos each time, is 88%. And then that odds of pregnancy after the 3rd transfer in people who didn't get pregnant is going to be now cumulatively 95% of people are going to be pregnant within those 3 transfers. So only 5% of people fall into this recurrent implantation failure category. And sometimes it's the uterus and sometimes it is the embryo. So to answer your question, number 1, can there be an issue with a whole batch of embryos and sometimes do we need to go get a whole new cohort or a new group? There can be. Remember that those embryos are from 1 month. They're just from that month. And so things that happened in that month, maybe there was an infection, you were exposed to something, can sometimes play a role. And there's so many other variables that are just unknowns about the lab or who was working or this or that, that sometimes are just really hard to quantify. A good example I like to use is donor eggs, because I had a patient who had donor egg-derived embryos. Now, these should work because these are really young, healthy patients, and they were even genetically normal. And we were transferring and transferring, and we were not having success. And this patient had a prior child. So she's older now, and that's why we were using donor egg. But the idea that it was really now she had this brand new implantation issue was a little difficult. And we did get another batch. We got a different group of eggs from a different retrieval from the same donor. And then she got pregnant the first transfer. So sometimes there is something to be said with the cohort being, I'm going to say, quote unquote, bad. Or sometimes you'll go get a second opinion and we say, hey, we want to change all the variables, which includes a new group of eggs grown in a new environment that often means changing the protocol somewhat or adding something differently, adding growth hormone now, doing a Lupron protocol instead of an antagonist, making sure you're taking other vitamins, that the sperm is better. Something inherently has to be different to make it make sense, but you're also changing the lab. My big question, and this is where you really got to have a doctor team that you trust to have this back and forth with, is do you need a whole new lab? Do you need to get a second opinion somewhere else? And anybody who's having recurrent implantation failure, I think you always should get a second opinion. Doesn't mean you have to go somewhere new, but you should send your records and you should get a new set of eyeballs. I'm also curious about the protocols. Have you had the exact same transfer protocol every single time? That drives me bonkers. Have they tried something different? It sounds like the hysteroscopy happened, which, where in the context of our losses or our failed implantations did that happen? Did we just find this submucous fibroid that was abutting into the cavity, which we know is associated with lower implantation rates? Things like that may sway my decision some. There's different protocols which on paper include getting somebody to ovulate and grow a lining with natural estrogen and giving you medication to grow the lining, which is estrogen. And if we step away within that controlled cycle, there's protocols with Lupron where we downregulate the pituitary gland. But Lupron has also been shown to be anti-inflammatory, especially for patients who have endometriosis. I live in the world where I think a lot of unexplained implantation failure might be due to undiagnosed endometriosis because it's hard to diagnose, or other autoimmune spectrum inflammatory disorders. So then we're looking at how do we change the environment? Are there different protocols to try? And there are protocols for recurrent implantation failure where you consider a longer suppression with Lupron. Sometimes this includes an aromatase inhibitor. Sometimes this includes another hysteroscopy. Everybody has a few little tweaks, but I would be having a heart-to-heart, really try to understand the plan. Once you get the new embryos, what are you doing different if that is their recommendation? And then really consider these are circumstances where you might want to send those records and really have somebody else from the outside look at them just to make sure you're doing everything that you can. Sending lots of love. All right, moving on to our next question now.
Hi, Dr. Natalie. I'm just calling. I've been a longtime follower and love everything you do so much. I'm calling because unfortunately, after 2 healthy pregnancies with no issues, my 3rd and what I hoped would be my last baby, I lost at 19 and a half weeks. They did all sorts of tests, autopsies, blood work, everything, checked my placenta, and everything came back normal except they said the placenta had an irregular shape and didn't really explain that much to me. My baby measured 14 weeks,
in size, but 19 weeks maturation-wise. My question is for you. They have said I would still be classified as low risk for my next pregnancy, and I'm in the two-week wait. Hopefully, I'm pregnant again. And that kind of frightens me because it means I will only get two ultrasounds again the whole pregnancy, at 8 weeks and at 20 weeks. So my question for you is if you have any guidance on what I should ask for to be different this pregnancy, if anything. They just keep saying it was this one-time fluke. That wasn't really caused by anything, but obviously to me that isn't really enough, and I'm terrified. So I'm just wondering how I can best advocate for myself and if there's anything I should ask for to be different. They did put me on baby aspirin, but that's it so far. Thank you so much. I hope you answer my question, but if not, that's okay. Thank you.
I am so, so sorry for your loss. I know that every single loss is so hard and devastating, but especially getting so far along in your pregnancy, you just convince yourself that everything's looked good. And I know you had hopes and dreams, and it's just, it really breaks a little piece of you. And I know it makes you so nervous to move forward again. So I really relate to where you are. My biggest piece of advice here or question is not that your OB or your team is wrong. Most of the time, losses like that, second trimester losses, random and just bad luck, something happened. However, I always think this is the place where if I were the patient, I would ask to see if I could go see an MFM, a maternal fetal medicine specialist, who is a high-risk OBGYN. And a lot of patients don't know. You can request this referral and your OB can send your records over. And MFMs love to see you before you get pregnant. They'll look through, you know, your whole history. They'll look through the records from that loss, talk about if you've had other losses, if you've had other issues along the way that you might not be associating in your head that might point towards something different that they want to look into. And at the end of the day, if they look through everything with this really detailed eye and they say, you know, everything is good, that's probably going to make you feel more reassured. So that said, hopefully one thing that might help you feel a little more reassured is that there was a meta-analysis looking at a lot of different studies that evaluated what happened in the pregnancy after a second trimester loss. And the number one most common outcome of the next pregnancy was a live birth. 81% live birth, 15% miscarriage, and 13% preterm birth. So the odds of preterm birth are a little bit higher than we would see in the general population, but ultimately the odds of having that miscarriage are not higher. So when I get nervous or when I get in my brain and when I start going down negative pathways, and especially when that would happen to me and I was in the midst of my infertility and loss journey, feeling something almost like a mantra, having it in my head, being able to say the most likely outcome of the next time I see a positive pregnancy test is that I get to a baby in my arms. That helped me. So I'm giving that to you right now. I hope you're pregnant at this moment. But if you're not, or even if you are, you can ask. You can be that advocate. You can ask to say, can I see the MFM, just to have a talk with them? That's going to make me feel better. And outside of that, you're doing what you can do. You're taking your prenatal vitamin. You're taking your baby aspirin. You can only control what you can control. So I'm sending you lots of love and a big, big virtual hug. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Apostrophe. With the temperatures starting to warm up, I'm so excited that summer is around the corner and getting ready and looking forward to the summer months. But I know that when I'm outside enjoying nature, I need to pick up supplies to prepare myself for summer adventures. And if you want to get your skin glowing in time for summer, it's time for you to get started with Apostrophe, who is sponsoring this episode. Apostrophe's goal is to help you feel confident in your own skin. So whether you're dealing with breakouts, signs of aging, or acne scarring, Apostrophe will help you love the skin you're in. I personally love that you get access to an expert dermatology team, a tailored treatment plan. It's simple to sign up for your first visit, and there is no in-person appointment or trip to the pharmacy needed. We have a special deal for our audience. Get your first visit for only $5 at apostrophe.com/AAW when you use our code AAW. That's a savings of $15. This code is only available to our listeners. To get started, just go to apostrophe.com aaw.com/AAW and click get started. Then use the code AAW at sign up and you'll get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. And now a word from one of our sponsors, Quince. The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune, and luckily I found Quince. Now I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. The best part is that Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands, but Quince partners directly with top factories, cutting out the cost of the middleman, passing the saving to us, and only working with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices. I personally cannot wait to wear my cute tan linen set this summer. So it's your turn to get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/AAW for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/AAW to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/AAW. Thank you, Quince. All right, I've got another question for us coming up now. As a reminder, if you'd like to call and leave your voicemail, you can call 657-229-3672. Again, that's 657-229-3672 and leave a voicemail.
Hi, Dr. Natalie Crawford. I love your podcast and I had a question regarding my recent miscarriage. I'm an IVF patient. I am 30 and it was my first transfer. We'd never saw a heartbeat. So I was around 5 to 6 weeks. Well, I got cleared and I'm currently waiting to start the next transfer process. And they told me I cannot start until I get my first real period. I was told that the bleeding that I had initially from the miscarriage doesn't count as a real period. And I was just wondering if it was normal to see spotting in between. I haven't gotten a real period yet, but I am experiencing some spotting for like the last, I would say, 3 to 4 days, 4 to 6 weeks after this occurred. So thank you for answering my question.
One of the hardest things about miscarriage and loss and then the waiting game for it to end or to get into that next cycle or that next treatment, it is insult to injury. And this is why when I'm counseling patients and we're talking about risk of miscarriage with a certain treatment or based on an age, I'm always really careful to say that, you know, months trying to get pregnant or even doing treatment with non-genetically tested embryos specifically, but in general, nothing is black or white. It's not yes or no. It's not a dichotomous outcome. Pregnancy outcomes, there's a whole big middle zone, meaning did you get pregnant? How long did it take? And then how long does it take to recover? It can take a really long time for that HCG to come down, which that HCG has to be dropping so that your brain will start to send out FSH to get your body to ovulate to get to that next period. And if that's a prolonged period of time, you can have some spotting, which can just come from an unstable endometrial environment. I've also seen people, however, have retained products of conception and even from an early miscarriage, like we talked about earlier in this episode. So this is a circumstance where it seems like it's been long enough from your loss, especially because we know it didn't get too far along, you had really good dates with IVF, that I would reach out to my clinic and say, hey, I still haven't had my period, but I've been having this spotting. Do you think we could get an evaluation? Personally, I might say, hey, come in, let me see an ultrasound and see what's going on. Maybe it's ovulatory spotting. Maybe that means I can do something in the luteal phase. Maybe there's some concern for something retained. Maybe we need to do further evaluation. So this is a point where it seems like your team is expecting you to start your period. I usually say I would expect it for most people within 6 weeks of when that HCG's gone down to zero. And if it hasn't happened by then, you should be reaching out. And in a lot of people, it happens before then. So no period within 6 weeks of that HCG coming down to zero, especially now with the spotting. Reach out so you can go in so they can try to figure out what's going on and hopefully resolve this so you can get into that next pregnancy and hopefully with the one that sticks.
Hi, Dr. Crawford. I'm calling to ask about PCOS and miscarriage. I have a PCOS diagnosis, but I'm a normal weight. I have normal androgen and insulin labs last we checked, and for the past few years I've had pretty normal periods varying by about a week. I recently miscarried my first ever pregnancy, and I'm wondering how likely it is that PCOS played a role. Whether you answer this question or not, thank you so much for everything you do. And I listen to your podcast every week.
To be honest, this is a really hard question to answer, but that doesn't mean that we don't address it. We do know that people who have PCOS have an increased rate of miscarriage over the general population. Usually we say it's about 30%, which is higher than the age-related average for most people. Why is that, and how do you modify it, are other questions that we don't have the full answers to. Part of this problem is that PCOS is so different in each person. Some people have really high androgen symptoms. Some people have really bad insulin resistance. Some people are obese. Some people have no period. Some people have really high luteinizing hormone. And everybody's so different, yet because it is a diagnosis that comes from a symptomology, like what your symptoms are, it groups all these people together. And so that does change and make some of the data hard to interpret. And that's one of the limiting factors in PCOS stuff in general. But we know patients have a higher rate of miscarriage with PCOS, even if they are normal weight, even if they don't have insulin resistance. And that's really hard because what do you do with that data? In general, I follow the same paradigm, meaning one, you can control what you can control for PCOS, and it sounds like you're doing it. PCOS lives on the inflammatory pathway, so trying to stay a healthy body weight, trying to decrease inflammation in your life, trying to eat lots of whole foods, taking, you know, nutritious supplements, not developing insulin resistance, gestational diabetes, prediabetes, being overweight. You can control some of those factors. You can get sleep at night to try to, you know, let your body heal. So you can do what you can do. There's that piece of it. And then you have to walk down the medical pathway. So if your periods are irregular, let's see if we can normalize them, maybe with letrozole. That's first line for PCOS. If you're still having loss and you've had two losses, we don't just blame PCOS. Once you've had two losses, you now should have a workup for recurrent pregnancy loss, because what if you have a clotting disorder, or what if you also have something else happening? So we want to make sure that we get all the information we need. And if we're really having consistent recurrent loss, and even the latest PCOS guideline says this, sometimes there's a place for IVF, because we can really control the environment of implantation in an IVF setting, and we can't do that in all of these other cycles. So just like everybody else who might be on that recurrent loss pathway, at some point we say, is our egg or embryo quality being affected? Is the environment being a problem? And how do we modify that? We got to come in and maybe we can suppress ovulation and grow this embryo in a lab and do genetic testing and put the embryo back in an optimal environment, because we know the rationale there is that some of this loss might be due to some of the PCOS hormonal impact on the uterus or on inflammation in general, whether that's high androgen levels or high LH from the brain. And if you're doing an IVF cycle and we come in and we suppress you and you use Lupron and now your brain's not sending out any LH, or you were on birth control pills at first and your testosterone levels dropped, we're markedly changing that environment. So now we can hopefully overcome that because the environment is different. Again, I think it's really important to stress that everybody's different, and people also just have random loss. So what's PCOS and what is just randomness? I try to tell everybody not to get in the rabbit hole after one pregnancy loss, because we know it does happen. Try to make sure you're being an advocate for yourself and you know what questions to ask. And certainly if it happens again, that's completely different. I'm hoping for you that that doesn't, and that this was just a one-off loss. Maybe it was PCOS, maybe it wasn't, but that the next pregnancy is absolutely perfect and you have a healthy baby at the end of it. But don't hesitate to get intervention, because sometimes you have to get blood work done and see somebody so that we can really get to the bottom of at least knowing that we have the data. You get to choose what you do with it, but you cannot make decisions on data that you don't know. All right, friends. Well, thank you so much for calling and leaving your questions. I know that miscarriage and loss questions specifically are so much more vulnerable than just the regular stuff. So thank you for being brave and sharing. If you would like to have a question, you can leave it on any topic. You can call 657-229-3672. Again, that's 657-229-3672. I have a slew of them. I'm doing more of these episodes because really these are my absolute favorite. So call, leave a question. You can always follow along on Instagram at NatalieCrawfordMD. We do put a question box up on Mondays and some questions will be answered on Instagram, some in the newsletter, and some will be answered at the end of the regular podcast episodes. Again, that's at NatalieCrawfordMD. You can sign up for the newsletter or learn more about our fertility courses on the website, NatalieCrawfordMD.com. And don't forget, there's always the YouTube channel in case you are a visual learner. Thank you, friends. Thank you all for listening to As a Woman. It would mean so much if you could rate, review, and follow the podcast to be notified of new episodes every Sunday. I hope you learned something new, and I hope you share it with someone in your life. Be sure to follow along on Instagram at NatalieCrawfordMD and check out the YouTube channel NatalieCrawfordMD. If you're interested in becoming a patient, you can also follow Fora Fertility. I'm so thrilled to have you here, part of the community that amplifies others as a woman.
Hey guys, welcome to The Collective. I'm Brianne Helfrich, a 26-year-old bioethics PhD student and clothing brand CEO. Welcome to my podcast where we talk all things health and wellness, navigating your 20s, and becoming the best version of yourself. So sit down, play that episode, and join The Collective.